It's Wednesday, October 5th. I'm Pam Jones. Baltimore's violence prevention programs will be getting some new funding. Maryland health officials say they're getting a handle on monkeypox. The state's Republican and Democratic candidates for governor share vastly different views at a Marylanders with Disabilities forum. Governor Larry Hogan has been asked to testify in the trial of his former chief of staff. Baltimore has a new map for its police districts, and October brings dozens of free arts events to Baltimore. It's the Daily Dose from WYPR, our latest reporting on Maryland's COVID-19 response and the local news of the day, made possible by GBMC Healthcare. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has been asked to appear as a witness in the federal fraud trial of his former chief of staff, Roy McGrath. It's unusual for a sitting governor to be asked to testify in this situation, according to the Daily Record, a business and legal newspaper. McGrath faces an 8-count federal indictment, including fraudulently receiving more than $200,000 in severance from a previous job. McGrath has pleaded not guilty. His trial is scheduled to begin later this month. Mayor Brandon Scott and the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement announced today that 8 organizations have been awarded $500,000 in American Rescue Plan funding. The funding of these community-based organizations will continue to help expand Baltimore's community violence intervention program. So far, MONSI has announced $1,225,000 in grants to organizations engaged in community violence intervention, victim services, youth justice, community healing, and reentry work. For the first time in 63 years, the Baltimore Police Department has a new district map. WYPR's Bethany Raja with that story.
The Baltimore Police Department says the new boundaries balance officer workload and optimize resource allocation. The bill passed on reconsideration Monday, 12-3, with 3 council members changing their initial vote from yes to no.
President Mosby.
Aye.
Councilmember Cohen.
Aye.
McCray.
Yes.
Dorsey.
Yes.
Conway.
Aye.
Schleifer.
Yes.
Middleton.
Yes.
Torrance.
Aye.
Burnett.
Aye.
Bullock.
Aye.
Porter.
Aye.
Costello.
Nay.
Stokes.
No.
Glover.
No.
Ramos.
Yes.
That bill is now approved.
The formation of new police districts in Baltimore City was spurred by a Maryland General Assembly bill in 2019 and based off of the 2021 census data information. Bethany Raja, WYPR News.
Baltimore County officials broke ground on a new Lansdowne High School. Lansdowne has had the dubious distinction of being rated the county's most dilapidated high school. It has cracking walls, water damage, and parts of the building are inaccessible for disabled students and staff. The building itself is sinking into the ground. If all goes as planned, the new $150 million school will open in 4 years. The two major party nominees for governor, Republican Dan Cox and Democrat Wes Moore, answered questions Tuesday at a debate hosted by Maryland Disabilities Forum and the National Federation of the Blind. The event focused on challenges faced by Marylanders with disabilities. WYPR's Rachel Bay reports the forum showcased the candidates' different philosophies on the role the state government ought to play in addressing those challenges.
Take a question about how the candidates will make sure government agencies have sufficient staff to provide quality services. For Cox, the answer involved the COVID-19 mitigation tactics he routinely criticizes.
We're going to end this nonsense of allowing everyone to pretend that they're working and showing up and failing to show up to work through the telework program unless they have a certified doctor's note. Right now, we have a debacle in state government where there's many, many workers that are sitting at home and have been for 2 years and do not show up and do their duty.
Moore, on the other hand, talked about filling jobs that Governor Larry Hogan's administration has let sit vacant at a variety of state agencies. Democrats in Annapolis frequently argue that these vacancies prevent government agencies from functioning. Moore said filling those vacancies will be a top priority.
Take a look at the office of the chief medical examiner, where there are, you know, overflows of sometimes 150 bodies. or the Department of the Environment, where they need about 187% more full-time employees, and they're failing at basic inspections.
Asked about expanding affordable housing, Moore said he would fight for people facing eviction to have a right to an attorney, which would require more resources for public defenders, and expand the Maryland Affordable Housing Trust, part of the State Department of Housing and Community Development. And ultimately, it comes back to Moore's flagship issue, reducing poverty.
That is the North Star for our administration. Pathways to work, wages, and wealth. Because if we can do that, it's also helping to address the housing issue that so many people and families are facing right now.
Cox, on the other hand, said the way to address a need for more affordable housing is by reducing environmental regulations that delay construction projects and by lowering taxes.
And so we have to lower property taxes and then create a mandate, an incentive for landlords to pass that savings back on. It lowers the rates of everyone.
The candidates were also asked about ensuring that schools are equipped to teach students with disabilities alongside their peers who don't have disabilities. Cox's answer involved a key part of his platform, giving parents a greater role in how and what their children learn in school. And part of that means expanding the state's school voucher program.
Parents will have $7,500 in their pocket per child. And if their school doesn't provide the services they need, not only do they get the $7,500 to portal that education to a private institution, but they're going to qualify for a waiver to get the special ed needs that they have at that private education system.
Moore, on the other hand, talked about injecting more funding into Maryland public schools. He lauded the massive school system reform plan known as the Blueprint for Maryland's Future and the funding boost it offers for special educational services. He said the state also has access to federal funds through the American Rescue Plan Act.
I mean, that money is earmarked towards ensuring that all of our students are getting a proper pathway to success, including children with disabilities. And so when you're talking about a generational opportunity of having essentially $2 billion coming in to help to address that.
The candidates are scheduled to meet a week from today for a debate sponsored by Maryland Public Television and WBAL-TV. Early voting begins October 27th. Rachel Bay, WYPR News.
Monkeypox is still a major threat in some communities. Recently, Maryland expanded its vaccine eligibility, and the state's top infectious disease official says numbers are trending in the right direction. WYPR's health reporter Scott Massioni has more.
On September 19th, Maryland officially broadened the parameters of who can get vaccinated for monkeypox. Previously, the shot was only recommended for people who were possibly exposed to the disease in the 2 weeks prior. Now Maryland's opening up the shots to people who are considered high risk. That includes people who have multiple sex partners and men who have sex with men. Peter DiMartino, director of Maryland's Infectious Disease and Health Services Bureau, says the expansion of shot eligibility signals a new phase in the response to monkeypox.
Pre-exposure prophylaxis is really about those who may have been exposed, but also those who might anticipate exposure. So we really are working with our local health departments who know their communities best. And so that is where all of our vaccine is located. Right now, every local health department has vaccine for any Marylander who might be at higher risk of acquiring MPX, who thinks that they might have had an exposure or is a named contact.
There was a point in time when the monkeypox vaccine was hard to get a hold of. However, more federally released doses, along with the approval for intradermal shots, those that don't enter the muscle, has built up the number of shots available. DiMartino says intradermal use only requires 1/5 of the dosage.
Normally, a vaccine goes in under the skin, but if you think about what the skin does, is it's a big layer of protection. So there are a lot of cells in your skin that are really good at keeping things out of your body and fighting things that make its way in. So by actually injecting into the skin, there's lots of good guy cells who can gang up on that little bit of vaccine and create more antibodies.
The monkeypox vaccine, like the COVID shot, is delivered in two separate doses about a month apart. As of September 30th, there have been 662 monkeypox cases in Maryland. A majority of those were concentrated around Prince George's County and the city of Baltimore. Nearly 6,500 people have received their vaccinations in the state. DeMartino says the vaccines are doing their job, but the risk is still out there.
The reality of it is right now we're seeing cases decreasing. Things are where we want them to be. We are optimistic, but we know that it is incredibly important that we help people protect themselves. And we have been doing that with sharing information about symptoms and getting tested. But if we can provide vaccine, that's one more layer of protection.
The LGBTQ community is still facing the stigma of the disease and the vaccine. Nyree Phillip, the community development organizer at Baltimore Safe Haven, says the disease has effects on how people interact with the LGBT community.
The stigma makes people afraid to interact with LGBTQ people because they think that we're disease-ridden. You know what I mean? And so I think that's the biggest ramification, is that it feels as if it has just sort of reignited those old stigma about being around and in physical contact with LGBTQ people.
DeMartino says the Maryland Health Department's holding community meetings to learn the best language to use to inform people about the disease without adding stigma.
The literal definition of stigma, we're making a mark on people's skin. And so when we created our education and guidance for the delivery of intradermal administration, we talked a lot about, hey, the place most people are going to think about putting it is on the forearm, but you can put it on the deltoid, right? Thinking through the whole process and the whole experience.
People interested in getting the monkeypox vaccine can register at the Maryland Health Department website. Scott Massioni, WYPR News.
The month of October has come in not only with its familiar cool temperatures, but it also kicks off the celebration of National Arts and Humanities Month. Here in Baltimore, that means the entire month will be full of opportunities to experience the very best of what the city has to offer artistically and culturally, all for free. I spoke with Jackie Downs, the director of the Arts Council for the city's Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts.
Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts, we are super excited to be producing for the 17th year Free Fall Baltimore, which is a citywide celebration of the arts held in conjunction, of course, with National Arts and Humanities Month. So we're very excited to be offering this amazing event citywide in October.
Take us behind the scenes of what it's like to just organize something like this.
Yes. Well, it is a lot of work, but we're excited to do it, and we're so pumped to see the fruits of all of our efforts and labor pay off this coming month. So we actually open up applications to organizations, vendors, and individual artists in June, July, and then we invite them to apply for funds. So we offer organizations with operating budgets under $300,000 the opportunity to apply for funding up to $1,000 to provide free programming throughout the entire month of October. Now, you can provide or produce one-day event, or you can produce several events over the course of the month, but we really want to support a diverse range of opportunities. We're excited because this year, and this year is the second year, I believe, that we have opened this opportunity up to individual artists as well. It was always for organizations and cultural institutions and vendors, because we want them to get high visibility. Anything that we can do to showcase the amazing talent that the city has to offer, we feel that is what we need to be doing as much as we can.
Nearly 100 events will be happening across Baltimore, ranging from art exhibitions to fashion shows, musical performances, and theater, and plenty for kids to enjoy too. For some of the shows, securing your reservation is highly recommended.
I would definitely, if you're interested in participating in some of our theater events, because theaters have capacity limits, of course, due to COVID, you want to just make sure that you're in that number. Now, again, all the events do not require registration. However, for those that do, I would absolutely follow up with that individual organization to ensure that your seat has been secured.
Well, you know, I can definitely tell you this. I know the fall for me is one of my favorite times of year. There's probably a bunch of people out there who might agree that they love the fall. But then there's some people that say, oh, you know, it's the fall, it's getting cold out, they're thinking there's not going to be much to do. This really dispels all of that, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, as the seasons are changing, and we're hopefully, knock on wood, coming out of this pandemic season, we really want to encourage our artists and organizations and show who've shown up for us this entire pandemic season. I mean, they really have helped just keep the energy and momentum alive throughout such an amazingly tragic and hard time for all of us nationally. But this is also a way for us to show them that we support them, we appreciate them, and for people to get out and have some fun.
We thank Jackie Downs, Director of the Arts Council for Baltimore City at the Office of Promotion in the Arts, for spending some time with us on The Daily Dose. If you would like to find out more about Free Fall Baltimore and what's happening throughout the month, visit the website freefallbaltimore.org. The Daily Dose is brought to you by WIPR, made possible by GBMC Healthcare. Many thanks to my news team colleagues, Rachel Bay, Shekinah Collier, John Lee, Scott Massioni, Joe McCord, Kristen Mossbrucker, and Bethany Raja. The executive editor of The Daily Dose is Danielle Irby. If you have a scoop or suggestion for this podcast, my social media hangout is Twitter at That's Pam Jones. Remember to be courageous and stay curious. I'm Pam Jones. Thanks for listening.